Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to the Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Excited to be here with you this Wednesday morning, April 30th, end of the month over here in April. Things are just starting to warm
just
up
like
a wee bit in Tucson. You know, when I think of the end of the month, I always get a little bit stressed out as a restaurateur, right? Everything is calculated in months over here. You always end up having to make your big rent payment. And we actually see a small drop in sales if, say, a weekend hits on the first or the second of the month because everybody has this massive expense, whether it's a mortgage or a rent or whatnot, that comes and hits them. And so when we get to the beginning of the month, right, it reminds me a lot about months and how, in general, months are actually a really terrible way of calculating a restaurant's profitability, because we have such an inequitable demand between, say, a Monday and a Friday and a Saturday, right? There's way more sales on a weekend day than there is on a weekday. However, there's an inequitable distribution of weekends based on months. Sometimes March might have 5 weekends, sometimes it might only have 4. And it creates a really interesting sort of year-over-year comparison when you think about months, because they don't always match up. If that month's got 5 Saturdays compared to last year's that only had 4, and this one has 5 Mondays, it's not nearly the same animal in any capacity. Now, when you also think about months, you think about lease contracts and what we do in the restaurant world when we pay our bills, when we set up to rent a property that we don't own. It often costs many millions of dollars, or at least high hundreds of thousands, to set them up. And we tend to lock those restaurants up for many, many years because you've got to protect that investment. Well, this week, breaking across the news, Borderlands Brewery announced that on a social media post that essentially they were being evicted out of their space on Avenue in being replaced by a Live Nation funded country or comedy club called the Punchline Comedy Club. Now, instantly an outpouring of support for local businesses piled on to Borderlands. There's literally a petition on change.org right now with thousands of signatures trying to find some way, shape, or form to stick up for the little guy, right? For the local that's being run over, says the narrative, by, you know, big business, by the landlords, or perhaps they're saying evil Rio Nuevo. Now, you know me, right? I am a big proponent of small business, a big proponent of local restaurants and businesses over here. But in this case, that story hasn't exactly been told correctly. One of the things that we have to do when we lease properties is make sure that we've got them locked down for an extended period of time, right? When you've got, you know, 6 figures or 7 figures invested into that particular space, you just can't afford to lose that. And as such, restaurants tend to exist on very long-term lease contracts, often with renewal options as well too, normally given to you in 5-year chunks, or in some cases, even 10-year chunks. And every one of those renewal options is generally tied to boring indexed escalators and other clauses that tick up things in the landlord's favor. In fact, almost every commercial lease is entirely in the landlord's favor. It's not like renting a house where you have a gross lease and your rent is just $2,000 a month and your sink clogs and you get to call up the landlord over here, right? This is a lease where you not only pay the insurance, you pay the property taxes, you pay for all the maintenance on top of the base fees of what those properties cost. Now, most people wouldn't want to let their business fall into a month-to-month situation. This happens when your lease expires. Your landlord isn't going to necessarily just evict you, as the narrative would say. Why would they want to take a zero for 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 months, waiting, hoping for another restaurant to come in, another tenant who might ask for a tremendous amount of tenant improvements as well, too? But that month-to-month lease is a double-edged sword. And we've seen this happen before in the restaurant business. Choice Greens, which was located on Campbell Avenue next to where Trader Joe's is, just south of River Road in Campbell, right, years ago, did not sign their lease extension. And they allowed that lease to go month-to-month. And, well, they thought, hey, that's kind of a good deal for us. We could go anywhere we want, anytime we ever wish. They weren't wrong. The problem was was that the landlord could do the same thing as well, too. And it didn't take long before a corporate chain walked in there. If you remember, Costa Vida Mexican Grill came in and smoked those guys out because they were willing to sign a 5 or 10 year lease. And of course, unfortunately, Costa Vida didn't even make it. They're now gone. And I believe that store is a diamond store at this point and not even a restaurant. And there's a happy ending because Choice Greens does have a new location at River and Campbell in the Jostler Village Center where P.F. Chang's and Sullivan's is located. However, Borderlands in this particular case, right, is going to have to look for a soft landing spot somewhere else. They left themselves in a position where their lease was month to month. They knew this was coming up front. Live Nation toured this property on February 13th, and you had to know it was potentially coming. 6 months ahead of time, a year ahead of time, you could have renegotiated those contracts in some capacity and looked at that and met with your landlord and said, you know what? Like, this is something we need to fix over here. I need to lock down this space for another 5 or 10 year deal. And although I don't have any inside information about Peach Properties and Borderlands negotiations with exactly what those rent terms would be, they certainly wouldn't want a tenant to leave if you could get one to continue to sign another long-term lease contract. It's way cheaper than booting somebody out and then doing a massive tenant improvement and getting $0 in rent until they open. And as we have guests on all the time, they're opening up new restaurants that talk about the challenges of opening up new restaurants. You see this situation fold out where that opening gets delayed and delayed and delayed again. And so no landlord wants to kick somebody out. Borderlands was not evicted from this space by an evil giant national tenant in any capacity. The space, quite frankly, was in a month-to-month lease, and the free market, which the landlords do have the legal and fiduciary responsibility to look at and see what is in their best interest for their very expensive piece of real estate, they found a tenant that's a comedy club. And so the criticism that has really hit both the landlords and Rio Nuevo is unwarranted in this particular case. In fact, it went so far as that threats were made to Rio Nuevo and they had to close their offices early last Friday in a really unbelievable situation. Now, on one hand, it shows the love for local restaurants and establishments, but on the other hand, it shows how news and news cycles can get out in an incomplete manner and that full narrative can't be told in some capacity. And this serves as a warning tale for restaurateurs in the future to pay attention to those lease contracts, to not let these things go month to month. Like, this isn't the kind of thing that you can just, like an apartment where you could pack up your couches and your bed and your clothes and be out of there in a day or two. Ripping out a restaurant and moving it from one place to the next is an absolutely unbelievably laborious and burdensome task. Not one that I wish upon my worst enemy in any capacity. And so you've got to protect your own interest in this and take some responsibility for your own economic decisions that you make. And when you allow that contract to go month to month, when you allow the landlord to have that opportunity to shop that to the open market, you're leaving yourself open to competition. And maybe that competition is a little more well-heeled. Maybe that competition is a national company that's got a bigger budget than the locals, that can afford more of TI. Maybe you signed a rent deal 10 years ago or 15 years ago that was below market price, and the landlord was salivating, chomping at the bit for an opportunity to actually realize full market price, because things have changed, right? Downtown Tucson is in fact more valuable today than it was 15 years ago. I might argue it may not be more valuable than it was 5 years ago, but if we go back to the genesis of Borderlands, it's safe to say that these spaces are substantially more desirable. And those operators have the economic and fiduciary responsibility to take care of their business and take care of their employees behind the scenes. The kind of negotiations that we never read about in the paper, the kind that you're not going to hear about on Yelp or Google reviews, but those sort of moves. And the burden is on them to find a landing spot. Now, little birdies tell me downtown that there's already a few landing spots here for Borderlands, that Rio Nuevo is working to cover this and find an alternative space for breweries. Breweries, as we've discussed on this show before, are an incredibly, incredibly difficult business these days. There was a tremendous saturation of breweries in Tucson. Perhaps we've hit peak craft beer. Maybe we're even on the other side of that peak because we're looking at other breweries such as Fire Truck closing all of their locations over here, right? And Borderlands was partners with Fire Truck in that Voltron Brewing as well, too, that now Crooked Tooth Brewing is part of. But ultimately, there's a big shakeup over here in breweries as well. And I have a feeling that they probably weren't willing to participate and pay full market rent for that space moving forward. And that's led to their unfortunate and untimely demise. And so just remember that there are always two sides to every story when you hear these ones in the news. When we come back after the break, we're going to bring some food stories in. Miss Jennifer English, a James Beard award-winning host of the Food and Wine Radio Network, a veteran of KVOI.
That's right.
Jennifer English coming up after the break on The Morning Voice. This is 10:30 a.m. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. Don't go anywhere.
And you know, Grant, we both have amazing women in our lives. And today, 21 years ago, I married my wife, Kelly, who is the amazing woman in my life. And so happy anniversary, sweetie.
Happy anniversary. That's awesome, man. Congratulations.
Point of personal privilege. Yeah, thanks.
Welcome back, Tucson, Arizona, to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. And today in the KVOI studios, we are joined by a James Beard award-winning guest. Only one person in the studio has got a James Beard award for radio right now, and it's not your host. We have Miss Jennifer English, founder of the Food and Wine Radio Network. Good morning, Jennifer.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us today. We're really excited to have you here in the studio.
This is such an incredible welcome home.
Hey, I understand you're a veteran of KVOI over here as well, too. This is maybe your fourth stint in the studio now?
Well, you know, I've spent some time here over the years, and in Tucson, in radio, we've all been a family. And so this has been a place I've called home three different times in my career, but today I'm just here as a guest.
I love it. Well, thanks again for taking part of your Wednesday morning to talk about the food and beverage scene here in Tucson with us. But first, let's break down for our listeners a little bit about yourself. Give us a little career arc history over here of Miss Jennifer English.
You know, it's a joy to be here again, because I just want to compliment you before we get started, because you do such an amazing job. I listen to you remotely, and everybody can listen around the world online. And it gives you that connection of what's going on here in town. And you connect the bigger picture of Tucson and what's going on in our food scene brilliantly.
Thank you. It's very kind of you to say.
So I got started. My life began in Boston. I grew up with great talk radio. AM radio back in the day. 50,000 clear channel watts going coast to coast. You could literally hear the signals of like WBZ all the way in the middle of the country. I grew up with a love of radio, and long story short, I also grew up with a love of food. And by the mid-90s, when interest in food in North America was booming, we were completely fascinated by food. We were waking up as a foodie nation. We were waking up everywhere as a foodie nation. I'd found myself in Tucson, Arizona. I was living here. I loved it. I actually worked for the Conquistadors. I know you're a Conquistador, so we have a lot of things in common that I'm going to love talking about today. And one of the things I did see after I went to graduate school, law school, business school, worked in agency life, Fortune 50 brands, Fortune 500 brands, working on all kinds of big programs, I saw that in the media, nobody was doing on the radio what Food Network was doing on TV. And I said, I really see an opportunity here. And one of the things I've become known for in my career is having a really good crystal ball and looking at forecasting and seeing opportunity. And in my life today as a consultant, and I do a lot of consulting for the hospitality industry, both, you know, on the local level and on the global level, that I see opportunities before they become big things. And so I started doing original talk radio with a dream of getting nationally syndicated about it. And the whole reason I got started here in Tucson is I was working for Dave Sitton. I don't know if you remember.
Of course, Dave Sitton
was the voice of the Wildcats, right? And I was working with him. I met him at the Conquistadors. We collaborated. We worked together. And if anybody remembers Dave Sitton, what a great guy he was. What a really dynamic, a rich part of our community. He was really a great citizen here. A lot in the same way you are. You're just really giving of your time and your energy and your efforts, both on the air and in your business. And you're making the culture more vibrant and exciting here, just like he did. I see a lot of similarities. And Dave knew that I really had this dream to be a talk show host. And he literally 25 years ago made it possible for me to get on the air in a market that was, let's be frank, we were in the 50s at the time, right?
What are you saying about the Tucson market over here? Come on.
No, listen. I mean, I don't know without any credentials. I didn't go to broadcasting school. I didn't go to Columbia. I didn't go to Syracuse. I didn't go to one of those. I didn't go to Emerson. I didn't have that background and that education. And I don't know that I would have gotten on the air because I hadn't really done much in food. I mean, I'd done everything in food, but I hadn't had an accomplishment, you know, a Michelin star or James Beard Award or anything like that. And I don't know that I would have gotten on the air, but I got on the air here because it was all meant to be the case. This is where I belong. I belong on the radio. And Dave saw that and he made it possible. And long story short, I was on the air. I did 4 shows. We got our first James Beard nomination. And the rest is history.
And for those that don't know, James Beard Award is essentially the Oscars of food over here, right? Yeah. It's pretty much the highest honor that you can get in the food service industry in some capacity.
Well, you got to remember back at that time, too, we've always known how amazing the flavor of Tucson is. It has got the city of gastronomy now to validate that it's one of the most rich and legacy-laden culinary destinations in the world, the city of gastronomy, right? We knew how good we were. We knew how delicious we were. But the rest of the country didn't necessarily, unless they were savvy. And one of the people that I met when I went to New York City for the first time with the Beards and all of those, you know, activities, those celebrations, the awards, the parties, I got a chance to meet Johnny Apple, who was one of the dynamic food editors at the New York Times. And when he heard I was from Tucson, he grabbed me and he's like, "We've got to talk." And we had these conversations. He's like, "Carlotta Flores and the team at El Charro made us famous, even if we didn't know how famous we were other places." And he said, "Do you know how amazing that is? Do you know how much I love El Charro?" And all the things that have come subsequently in the last 25 years, I saw the seeds of. And so it was that idea of looking into my crystal ball, seeing what I saw on the media side, knowing what I loved about Tucson, seeing what I saw in the crystal ball here, and then going out and seeing what other people are seeing, and it all came together in the way that let us literally build a legacy media organization called the Food and Wine Radio Network that is this year celebrating our 25th anniversary.
Which is pretty amazing to think, not only just 25 years in business and just about anything, right? 25 years in the food service business is really a big deal in some capacity, but that the genesis of this started in little old Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah. And there are a lot of things that start here. Look at the city of gastronomy. We punch above our weight in a lot of different classes, right? We have such great things here, and people are just beginning to understand, from our spas and our spa cuisine to our health and wellness, Dr. Andy Weil, Victoria Mazes, all the people over there. There's so many things that have happened and come out of here that are so transformative. But if we look at, and this is the good thing, because I know you're in the business, and I know you're in the business of knowing what's delicious right now. Over the last 25 years, we've had several big food movements. But where they've all led to is this moment. And if you look at how impactful the food we do here is to the rest of the country, I'd say Tucson is really having our moment, not just because of city of gastronomy and not just because of all of the things that the 100-plus years of El Charro and Chef Maria Maison and you guys and everybody that's here and, you know, BK and Wero Canelo and you know, the Sonoran hot dog having a moment. If you look right now at the 5 big trends that are happening in food, one right at the top of the list, if the list is tacos, burgers, fried chicken, spicy fried chicken, fried
sure,
chicken
Nashville
sandwich,
hot chicken Nashville
hot chicken, right?
Now.
Pizza. And pizza and tacos are going neck and neck. They're the Ali and Frazier of food at this moment for supremacy. And vegetables. Those are like the 5 plants, right? Those are the things that are really competing right now. If you look at the James Beard Award nominations for the last couple of years, all around the country, in each of the regions of the country, they're doing food that gets nominated that looks like it comes from here. One of the things that I think is important about that is to say, our food, our tacos, our seasoning, big.
I love it. Well, let's take that moment to take a quick break of all the amazing things that are happening in Tucson. We've got Jennifer English, James Beard award-winning radio host, founder of the Food and Wine Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 1030 AM, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. Every weekday, 7 to 9 a.m., The Morning Voice brings you local news with a Tucson twist to it. On Mondays, you've got Lydia Aranda. Tuesdays, General Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council bringing you the engagement hour. On Wednesdays, you get me, Food for Thought, the intersection of restaurants and politics and business over here in the Old Pueblo. On Thursdays, tomorrow, you've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And on Friday, Dr. Ed Ackerley bringing you all kinds of new and wonderful things from the University of Arizona. But we've got another segment in store for you with Miss Jennifer English, the founder of Food and Wine Radio Network, celebrating 25 years on the air, and James Beard Award winner. Welcome back, Miss Jennifer.
Well, it's so good to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, so I was looking up at your career arc over here, and I saw that you're also the editor of Proof Magazine. I love the name over there. We have a restaurant called Proof as well, too, here in Tucson. But the Proof Magazine out of Las Vegas, right?
Yeah.
And so you're on year 7 of the Proof Awards as well, too?
Yeah, so the Proof Magazine is a division of Food and Beverage Media, where I was also editor-at-large for a long time. And there's the great thing about food, and I think, you know, you're here living proof of this. If you're in the food business, you kind of are like, you get to do everything. You don't just do one thing. And so, like, you're a restaurateur, and you're an operator, and you're a broadcaster, and you're a philanthropist, and you're really engaged in the community. The thing about food is food lets you do lots of different things. So in my career, I get to do lots of different things. Not only am I a broadcaster, not only am I the editor of BC Food News and some other, you know, sort of Web3-focused, future-oriented kinds of things, but I've been part of Food and Beverage Media, which is one of the largest trade industry publications based out of Las Vegas. And we publish not only Food and Beverage Magazine, but Proof Magazine with the Proof symbol, the percentage symbol, and the Proof Awards, which is a spirits industry magazine. And we look at the best new products and trends that are out there. So I took all these skills that I have of forecasting. I took my crystal ball, and I get to not only write stories and cover stories, but report on trends that are happening in the industry. And during COVID, we did Food and Beverage Magazine Live, and we did a show that reached out to all the people that work in our industry that were displaced, because people didn't realize that when you work in food, your food family, your restaurant family, your bar family, they're your social, they're your everything. And they really, truly become your family. And when you can't go to your restaurant, when you can't serve your guests, when you can't be in service, and that's the other biggest thing that we have in common, is we're here in service. It's such a privilege to be able to say, I'm here in service. I'm here at your service. So we took all these things and we did Food and Beverage Magazine Live and Proof Live. And so you can, you know, find the old broadcast of those. But what it lets us do is all our judges for the Proof Awards, and by the way, we have about 15 million readers a month on both publications. We have buyers come in as our judges. So they know what you all on the ground, in the restaurants, in the bars, the consumers want to see. So they're the ones that bring, it's like having knowledgeable, really connoisseur-based, educated guests come in and tell me what tastes best when we get the 800 or 900 big array of entries in the awards every year. There's some of the most credible and reliable awards accordingly, not only because these are learned people, but because it's all the new products and we taste everything. So by the time it gets to you with a gold medal or a double gold or a century award, and you find it like the Delta Lounges or you find it somewhere on the top shelf, we'll have vetted it really carefully. And so one of the things that we are forecasting, and I know you probably see this too, is ready to drink continues to be a huge, huge trend. And ready to drink means somebody has prepared a cocktail and they put it either in a bottle for you to taste or they've put it in a can for you to taste. And literally, you don't have to do any mixing, measuring. You don't have to do anything.
Oh, it's a hot, hot category of the last 5 years in the service industry, right? Starting with the White Claws and the Trulies and the High Noons and this sort of thing. But the industry is maturing quite a bit into all kinds of other RTDs, as they call them, right?
Yeah. And so I brought a couple of things for you to see. And one is a Mai Tai. We're going to see much more of this, and everywhere you go, you're going to see this. But I know that you are a really ahead of the curve kind of guy, and we were talking offline here a little bit about alcohol-free, which has been a big thing. I started covering alcohol-free about 5.5 years ago, and I covered it for Proof, and I got them to do an alcohol-free Proof Awards about 4 years ago. And
oh,
we had a limited number of entries because the category was so new, but it grew. And then a couple of years ago, I brought it to Tucson as a beta test. We did a pop-up down off of by the airport, by the warehouse district over there. And we brought some of the best curated non-alcohol and alcohol-free. And people always ask about, is it mocktail? Is it non-alcohol? Is it alcohol? I like the language alcohol-free. And there are a lot of choices that are alcohol-free. But the reason it's popular, you may think of it this way. If you are somebody who likes to have a beer and you're going to be out for the whole night or that whole day, we think that every second or third beer should be alcohol-free because the products are now so good that you really don't miss much if you substitute some ready-to-drink in for what you're drinking all day. And it gives you a much more healthy, much more reasonable approach to the day. We always suggest moderation in everything, for sure. But if you're the kind of person who's going to be having a big dinner and you're going to have a second beer or a third beer, we really think you should look at alcohol-free for that second or third. And as an operator, I think we're all really happy to see alcohol-free options now truly being an option. But where we've seen a gap is in things other than the alcohol-free beers. So ready-to-drink cocktails that are alcohol-free, and I brought you literally my favorite.
Look at this, there's one, a lime daiquiri over here.
This tastes, it's not as delicious as a sign guy, I'll tell you that, but, which is a conquistador
reference here for sure.
But I will tell you, this tastes so much like it that if you were to put this in the kind of glass you would get in Havana, Cuba in 1960, and you put a fresh squeeze of lime on it, it'd be terrific. And there's some great margarita options as well. Edna's does a nice job. I could give you, you know, a bunch of different names, but I'm one of those people who says, look at the category because it's going to be really exciting coming into this next cycle. We're looking at the horizon, the forecast. Alcohol-free is going to be a big thing.
I think so too, Jennifer. I think that not only alcohol-free, light alcohol cocktails, like normally the old culture would be like, I want a heavier pour on things. And we're looking at cocktails that maybe only have 3/4 of an ounce of alcohol versus, say, the standard 1.5-ounce size pour that's used. And there's even alternative intoxicants out there as well, too. We saw famously in the news just this week with Attorney General Chris Mays banning the hemp-derived THC products in a ruling. And there's, of course, lawsuits going on about this right now. But as of the 24th of April, so 6 days ago, Total Wine had to get all of those products off of their shelves in spite of being legal federally, according to the Farm Bill from 2018. The current Arizona Attorney General said, not on my watch. You've got to be a dispensary to sell product like that. And so it's going to be a brave new world to see these products one day potentially make their way onto the shelves of the coolers of restaurants throughout Southern Arizona.
Right.
Can I serve you a cocktail and then a hemp-derived cocktail in some capacity? Can I get insurance for that? Right. That's actually probably the big question.
And if I have a gaming license and I'm one of the best facilities in the Southwest and I have a great gaming operation as well, is that going to impact whether I can do those two things? We're seeing those kinds of dynamics playing out all over the country. And with a lot of roots in Las Vegas, we're really on the cutting edge of a lot of those things. And one of the things I'll tell you is there are incredible. So when we are talking about this, by the way, we're talking about our forecasting. It's all about opportunities. I've made a career of seeing where opportunity is when people didn't see an opportunity. Doing nationally syndicated shows about radio shows about food, when nobody was doing anything like that, looking at the horizon of alcohol-free beverages when people weren't doing that. You have to look where things really present an opportunity, and that's what one of these things that we're talking about now with the alcohol-free and where it's going to go for operators and restaurateurs. We're talking about this as an opportunity. I think there's tremendous, tremendous opportunity in the world of food right now, even though the economy's bearing down, restaurants are closing left and right. I'm the kind of person who will tell you, if you look, there will be opportunities everywhere. You just have to see things differently than other people are looking at them. Shift your mindset and look at where the real potential is for things.
Well, there's a lot of challenges and storm clouds on the horizon, particularly in the state of Arizona, right? Where we're staring down the barrel of a rising minimum wage that pretty much is never going to stop going up at this point. The city of Tucson's got a differential minimum wage that's actually, you know, 30 cents higher right now than the state's as well, too. And all those are adding to some storm clouds on what is really a horizon that we're really excited about over here. We're starting to certainly see some choppiness in the industry in this sort of post-COVID time as well, too.
Well, we also live in a technological time. And my good friends, Drew and Tracy Neporant, that are in New York City, that run the Myriad Restaurant Group, they've been great restaurateurs, legendary restaurateurs for 40 years with Tribeca Grill and Nobu. Tracy Neporant has said, as long as I've known him, Jen, it's a dime on a dollar business when you're doing it really, really well. And what happens is you get these pressures from all points in the 360 degrees full circle of operations of the food service industry, including, you know, taxes or tariffs or wages and food costs and all of these things. Add the layers of technology to that. How many different SaaS subscriptions do you have to have as an operator? You've got your Open Tables, you've got, which is a fantastic company. It's a mind-blowingly great company. How do you operate without it? How do you operate without the third party providers of food delivery services? That's a huge thing that's making food delivery an important part of our economy and our operations right now. When you add all of those things in, the dime is shrinking.
Without a doubt. Well, let's take that opportunity to take a quick break over here. We've got another segment with James Beard award-winning food and radio network host and founder, Miss Jennifer English. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 10:30 a.m. The Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, and we're joined again in the KVUI studios by Miss Jennifer English, James Beard award-winning host of the Food and Wine Radio Network. Welcome back, Jennifer.
I love being here. I love talking to you about this. I could literally stay here all day and talk food with you.
You can. Well, don't worry. We've got a show that goes all the way till 9 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, this can be met by we have the technology over here to get that done.
Yeah, but you don't know how hard it is to sit on this side and not want to slip into my interview mode and start interviewing you, because you literally are somebody I have so many questions and I have so many things I want to talk to you about. But that's what I've done throughout my career, is I've talked to the most fascinating people in the world of food, the true influencers and tastemakers in the food scene.
So let's talk about the Tucson food scene over here for a minute. We were talking before the break about some of the storm clouds that were on the horizon, right? And you see the rise of downtown when we opened up with the modern streetcar, and Rio Nuevo funded an awful lot of restaurants, and we got even some out-of-city investment from some pretty heavy hitters. And some of those folks haven't made it, right? Speaking of James Beard Award winners, right? Pizzeria Bianco in Phoenix, there's a three-hour wait every day for his restaurant in Heritage Park downtown. In downtown Tucson, out of business in 18 months.
Yeah, but you know what he's doing in Los Angeles. He's bigger and better than ever. He's booming. His stuff is fantastic. He's doing a great job with everything he's doing. I can't explain what happened in that location. What I can tell you is I got here in the 90s, and Tucson was a different place. And yet it was exactly the same as it's always been. You understand?
Without a doubt. I started restaurant business in 1995 here in Tucson. I was a dining room captain at Daniel's in St. Phillips Plaza, right?
Yeah,
that's now Union Public House. And I worked for River Road Brewery, Breckenridge Brewery, like in St. Phillips Plaza.
By the way, Daniel's was Jeff Fuld.
Yes. Yeah. L Wine Country Restaurant in two different iterations afterwards. Yes, very much so.
Yeah. That was a delicious time to be here. You had chefs like Albert Hall up at Acacia. You had, you know, Doug and Feast, and then of course Janos transitioning in, and we still had Mama Luisa's. Now we have the new Mama Luisa's. Now we have the El Charo family, and now we have C. Charo, and we have Charo Steak and Gary Hickey has done amazing things. Michael Elefante. The one thing I'll tell you, and you're in this business, so I'm not telling you anything new. No other community, no other culinary community in the country has what we have here in terms of the culture among the chefs and the camaraderie. And no matter how many new organizations that come into our community that join this community, they don't understand just how close a family, a food family, we are. The chefs really do love each other that much. You know, whether it's Doma, having Casa Madre. Have you been there? It's unbelievable.
No, I'm familiar, but I've not been.
Unbelievable. We have just great people doing extraordinary things, and we are our own little magical ecosystem of culinary. And I think that's part of why I could do something like start Food and Wine Radio Network here 25 years ago, and why it did succeed, because we just approach food unlike any other community in the world. We've got the best chefs literally anywhere. And just look at the fact that every other region in the country, according to the James Beard Awards, Best Chef Southwest is where you'd expect to see tacos. But Best Chef Midwest, Best Chef Mid-Atlantic, you're seeing our food being done all over the country at that level, at that Oscars of the food world level.
Well, we've taken a shift to a little more casual, right? Like white tablecloth, fine dining as we know it is essentially a dinosaur at this point. When we were discussing Daniels and you think of Cafe Terracotta and you think of Acacia and Llanos, you know, and the Gold Room and these sort of historic places in Tucson, you don't see so much of that anymore. We've kind of removed the white tablecloth, right, and cashed things up. I like to think the food is still great, but the overall experience has had to get a little more casual.
Well, think about it this way. We wanted that food when that food was happening. Restaurateurs are always really good at saying, you're my guest. I see you. I hear you. You matter. And I want to welcome you warmly with hospitality. And I want to deliver absolutely irresistible food for you to enjoy so that you can come here and create memories and have a great experience. What we want today is different than what we wanted then. We wanted to be able to go somewhere then. But one other big shift is taking place, and I know we've only got a few minutes till the top of the hour, but this is like a perfect natural segue. For 25 years, we focused on cooks, cooking, and chefs. We had celebrity chefs, celebrity chef cookbooks, celebrity chef restaurants. And for 25 years, we focused all of our content and our media and our attention that way on the chefs and restaurateurs. And whatever they said, we were taking, oh, yeah, well, that must be good if they're talking about it. That must be irresistible if they're making it, or some guy's telling me it's good, or she's the James Beard Award winner and telling me to try this. And in the last year and a half, we've had a complete 180-degree shift from cooking to eating. Eating is the new cooking. And if you look everywhere in media, you're going to see eating, eating, eating. From Anthony Bourdain to Somebody Feed Phil to David Chang on Dinner Time Live, having two celebrity eaters as guests. And it's a great place to jump off.
I love it. Eating is the new cooking over here. That's great food for thought. We'll close this hour up of The Morning Voice. Don't go anywhere. More with Jennifer English and Grant Kruger on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to hour two of The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, joining you on this wonderful Wednesday morning, April 30th. I can't believe it's going to be May tomorrow. Unbelievable.
Wow.
This winter season went by so quick, and now is coming the absolute highest of the high seasons here in Tucson. These first couple weeks of May are really it, right? It is on like Donkey Kong, as they say. We're leading up to a Cinco de Mayo here on Monday. I won't have another show before Cinco, so I'll give you my take on Cinco de Mayo over here. Certainly when it falls on a Monday, it's a little less punchy than when it hits on a Thursday or Friday or Saturday, but still is an amazingly large, big happy hour, sort of funded and fueled by the beer companies and the tequila companies these days. But it's my civic duty to remind all of our listeners over here that, of course, Cinco de Mayo is not in any capacity Mexican Independence Day. Cinco de Mayo is, of course, as many of you know, the celebration of the victory against French forces in the Battle of Puebla, May 5th, 1862. Now, how did we get to a point where French forces were invading Mexico, right? When we start to think about all the tariffs and our somewhat frosty relations with Canada and Mexico these days, didn't we have something going on that would have prevented other companies or other countries' imperialism from happening in the United States? And the answer is, yes, we did. We had the Monroe Doctrine of 1823, which basically said, hey, rest of world, the Americas are our countries to take advantage of, not yours. And for about 40 years, we were able to do that and prevent, for the most part, European nations from entering into Latin America. We'll skip aside the Falkland Islands in 1833 over here, but for the most part, like, they didn't get to mess with America, we did. But then we had our own little problem starting up in the early 1860s. You might remember this little thing called the Civil War. And as such, we couldn't really cover our southern border or our southern neighbors anymore. Mexican President Benito Juarez in 1861 decided that he was going to stop repaying all the debts that they had borrowed from Spain and France and England, and essentially not make these payments anymore for a couple of years. And without Big Brother to watch their six, the United States, tied up in our own self-interest from keeping our country from imploding, we were powerless to stop the French forces from sending in an armada where they landed in Veracruz, capturing the port of Veracruz, and storming their way to Mexico City. They were greeted by Mexican forces from an elevated position. There were about 4,000 Mexican troops against the 8,000 French troops, and they defeated those French invaders, driving them back from this elevated position in the victory of the Battle of Puebla in 1862. As someone that spent 11 years living in Mexico, I can assure you that Cinco de Mayo is actually not a federal holiday in the country of Mexico. It is celebrated in the state of Puebla, and it does have some cultural significance. And in fact, like, it isn't quite just the beer holiday that you might think. There were a number of interesting things that happened afterwards. One, the French forces, quite frankly, retooled and came back a year later in 1863, capturing Veracruz, capturing Puebla, and then storming the Castillo de Chapultepec in Mexico City, taking over the country and installing an Austrian dictator between 1864 and 1867. This was Maximiliano and Carlota, you may remember from lore. And so that brought in, speaking from a food and beverage perspective, a number of French and Austrian influences into Mexico. Where did the Mexican lagering style of beer come from? How did they learn to make a lager? Oh, wait, the Austrians, right? How did the accordion make its way into banda, norteño, and cumbia music? Oh, wait, you know, the French and Austrian influences came into the country at that particular time. Now, by about 1864, when the United States got their act together, we began funding the insurgent Mexican forces with money and guns to eventually throw out the French. And in fact, like, had the Mexicans not won the Battle of Puebla in 1862, it's been hypothesized that the French forces would have actually contributed heavily to the Confederate States of the United States and perhaps would have tipped the balance of the United States Civil War towards the Confederacy with French aid. And so the Battle of Puebla of May 5th, 1862 may have in some capacity actually helped protect America as a country by preventing the French from essentially funding the Confederacy and backing them up a whole nother year. So I just wanted you to think about that when you're out there celebrating this Monday and probably the entire weekend. We've got a great event at St. Philip's Plaza tomorrow, starting with Leticia Ortiz and TV Estrella is bringing us about 7 hours of baile folclorico, mariachi, and rock in Espanol on St. Philip's Plaza starting at 4 p.m. tomorrow. And also, Ms. Jennifer English, I believe we've got the Kentucky Derby coming up this weekend, right?
We do, but before you do that, I want to say thank you for the torta. We have great tortas because we got great bread, right? I mean, I always think of that when I think of Cinco de Mayo, that one of the things you really should do is find the best torta in town.
I love it. It's kind of an underappreciated food category. You know, we talk about tacos, we talk about the Sonoran dog, but who's got like a big torta fest over there? And I love myself a good torta.
Well, look at it. I mean, the French are in Vietnam, we have the banh mi, the French are in we get the torta. I mean, you know, there's some, it's the silver lining, right?
Yes.
It's the silver lining of all these things. Talk about silver lining. I brought my, so, and this is why I thought this was important. So when I won this James Beard Awards, which I brought in for
she's
you
got the
see.
Award right okay. here for those that are not here. Watching
all
on
right.
this one. This is like the gold medal of cooking right now, and I'm holding it in my hands. This is pretty amazing.
With the face of James Beard looking up at you. I literally was nominated that year and won for my Kentucky Derby episode. We got the good folks at Brown-Forman to do live mint juleps from the center paddocks at the Kentucky Derby. And I know you've been to the Derby, right? So we literally broadcast everything about the Kentucky Derby that year. And when we went to New York for the awards ceremony was held on Derby Day. So I literally won this prize for the Kentucky Derby show on Derby Day of the year that I won.
Amazing.
And so I have this really powerful connection. And so because it is Derby Day weekend coming up, and I brought my official Kentucky Colonel silver julep cups to make you in the next segment a mint julep live.
I love it. As I always say, you can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning. And we're going to be starting in the morning over here on live radio. I like to have a good mint julep before 8:10 in the morning. That's pretty amazing. So Kentucky Derby coming up this weekend as well too, right? The biggest horse race of all horse races over here. Something that draws a lot of interest, I think, nationwide. And makes me think of the challenges that we're having in horse racing here in Pima County right now with the Rito Downs. The county had reached out to me this week, one of the procurement officers, and told me that as of Monday, nobody in the county had applied for the Rito Downs to operate it. And they extended the date of their RFP, this request for production, to May 2nd. And so we're actually kind of staring down the barrel of the possibility that there may not be an operator to do horse racing in Pima County for another 3 years at a minimum right now. And I think that's pretty unfortunate.
And it's such a robust part of our legacy here with our Western roots, our ranching roots. These are the reason we are us is because of all these things, because of the 4,000 years of gastronomy, because of our ranching roots. If you've been lucky enough to be here for any amount of time and you celebrate rodeo week and you get, you know, rodeo week off from school for a reason, and we have, you know, the meat lab over at the U of A, and we have all of these traditions and the horses and the horse racing and horse culture, and then organizations like, you know, track and trot and all these other things. We have a lot of legitimate legacy connected to this. To give that up, we should give that up as reluctantly as we give up our great architecture and any other aspect of who we are. And I know that when we look at the old five C's and the new five C's, we've got to maintain that connection to our past.
Without a doubt, something so important to our past over here. The Rito Downs is, of course, registered in the National Registry of Historic Places. It was designed by Bernard Friedman of the Friedman Block on Broadway as well, too. And he developed the original JCC. And he did those grandstands as well, too, that sort of iconic arch design that you see from the grandstands, all done by this famous local architect. And right now, horse racing is on the ropes for sure in southern Arizona. I've been a big proponent of a multi-use facility over there, and not the soccer battles that you hear about all the time. That problem has essentially been solved with the developments on Valencia and the new soccer fields that we have down there. But a way to do more food festivals, right? They had the Taco Fest this last weekend on Saturday. A way to do more concerts with the Conquistadors the last couple of years. We had Midland and Roger Klein and the Peacemakers play 2 years ago at that venue. And just last month, we had Vanilla Ice and Tone Loke and Rob Bass come play one night, and country music star Co Wetzel the following night. I'd love to see more events at that particular venue. It just popped up on social media a couple of days ago. The same group that's doing the Taco Fest, that did the Taco Fest on Sunday, is doing Boots in the Park on October 18th of this year. And so they're going to have a big country music lineup on October 18th at the Rito. And I'd love to see more and more events at this iconic venue. It's centrally located. It's a great time. It's in the National Registry of Historic Places. You're not exactly supposed to tear this thing down. So I always say use it or lose it.
And I know you're a pizza guy. You're a pizza lover like I'm a pizza lover. Last weekend in Los Angeles, Steve Dolinsky, a guy out of Chicago, is producing a city pizza fest. He's done a couple of them. They're going to spread. there's a way to take whatever's happening in our culture and connect it to what we have and where we have to celebrate those things. Because as the city of gastronomy, we have more interest in doing these things. And I would argue that food has a huge opportunity to be a part of our future as much as it's been a part of our past.
Without a doubt. And we come back after the break. We're going to talk about food, the future of food, and with a local restaurateur over here, Freddie El Meslimani from Boscaria that just opened up downtown, and Urban Pita with a pair of locations coming up after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 1030 AM. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, and we've had a great hour and some change already with James Beard Award winner Jennifer English, the founder of the Food and Wine Radio Network. And as well, we've got the pleasure of having a couple budding young restaurateurs here in studio. We've got from Boscaria, we've got Freddie El Meslimani and Ryan Stancato from Boscaria and Urban Pita. Welcome, guys.
What's up, guys?
Hello, how are you?
Well, thanks so much for taking part of your Wednesday to come out with us and talk a little bit of food and beverages. Well, Jennifer English is mixing up some cocktails for us over here in the morning. Why don't you give us a breakdown of what restaurants you guys operate right now?
I currently operate Urban Pita and Boscaria. Urban Pita has two locations, one that's downtown, one on the east side. Unfortunately, right now, the downtown location is being remodeled and should be open within 2 or 3 months, or hopefully in the fall of 2025.
So that downtown Urban Pita, Freddie, was your first location, correct?
Correct.
Where did you start before that?
I started with my parents on university. When I went to college, they owned Sinbad's. And then that's pretty much where I got my my experience. And later on after college, and I decided to branch out and try to do my own thing. And I opened Urban Pita, and it was a hit.
So you never thought about wanting to work at Sinbad's over there, or is it just working for the parents is a little rough?
It's a different environment when you're working for your parents. The room of growth is kind of limited. You kind of have to go with what the family wants most of the time. Doing your own thing kind of gives you a better ability to demonstrate your imagination and to kind of go above and beyond of what you want to do.
I love it. Well, one of the things that I thought you did that was always really neat at Urban Pita was that you guys were open late, right? Like we would go and have an adult beverage at the local nightclub Hi-Fi next door over there, and Urban Pita was there willing to accept you with open arms and open pita bread at 2 o'clock in the morning as well, too.
Yeah, correct. See, I did not grow up here. I grew up in Lebanon, and for us, food was always available 24/7. It's not an issue of, oh, this place is closed, this place is open. You can get whatever you want whenever you want. So coming here, it was, you get grounded at 9 p.m., which is very unusual for somebody that, you know, for a city to be lively. You can't just have everything shut down at the same time around 9 o'clock. So the idea was we want to be able to stay open, demonstrate that there's life past 9 p.m. So that's basically what we went for.
I think so, too. And I love that sentiment and that idea over here. I was one, too, before we opened Union Public House, was so disillusioned that so many times I would go to restaurants in Tucson at 8:30 or 8:45, and literally I'd be getting the stink eye. Like you had just ruined the server's day because they were just about to get off and get to go to Danny's Baba Kiveri and have an adult beverage. And now suddenly you've elongated their evening at 8:45. And I always thought, gosh, like in these bigger cities and other countries, you can get food so much later, and that's just not as easy here in the old Pueblo. So Urban Pita was a pretty big hit off the bat, no? I mean, this one went really, really well, located next to a popular nightclub. What happened with the closure of the downtown Urban Pita? Like, why is this one not open right now?
It was a long story with the process of getting the landlord to start the fixings and figuring out who's responsible for what. That kind of ate about 4 or 5 months of figuring out who's responsible for what. So in a nutshell, what happened was one of the pipes in the building on top of us broke, and that pipe happened to be a fire sprinkler. So they went into a legal battle because they want to know who's at fault, and it turns out that nobody's at fault. So that kind of dragged it a little bit, and now our insurance had to step in. We had to change the hood. Supply chain hasn't really picked up after COVID that much. So we're still waiting on products 4 or 5 months out.
That's insane. But, and to think about like this sort of devastating hit that your first restaurant, your baby gets closed down by this, but rather than just turtle up in the fetal position and just have life kick you when you're down, you've went out and done the opposite. You've gone and opened 2 new restaurant locations during that time. There's a second Urban Pita on the east side, no?
Correct. That one was in the works right after COVID. We signed the lease right after COVID, thinking that everything was fine, but that project dragged an extra year. So that's why it happened that it opened a year later. Basqueria, when we first started that project, the city and the contractors had issues going forward with our permits and getting all that stuff together. By the time we getting the first permit, the contractors weren't ready, or they had picked up another job because they can't just sit and wait for 3-4 months on a permit. So they have to, you know, make a living. So every time a permit comes through, it takes 3-4 months additional. In order to get the contractors back on track, you're going to have to bring them back in. They have to remove off their current job. So it was a challenge, but it took us about 2 years to open that one.
It's unbelievable to think that it would take that long to open a restaurant, but this is how complex like these construction jobs are, right? With trade stacking and each job dependent on the other one to be complete before you can move to the next pass. And of course, each one of those requiring a permit, an inspection, a re-inspection and whatnot as well too. I mean, unfortunately, we sometimes do have a reputation here in the 520 of not being quote unquote business friendly. And this certainly seems like this is backing that reputation up.
Yeah, for sure. The city tries as much as it can to help, but sometimes it gets stuck in, on somebody's desk for unknown reason. And then for you to figure out what's going on, for them to reach back to you in order to fix the problem, that takes time. I think they're just understaffed at this point, but other than that, I think they need to help at least businesses figure out what they need for permits, and don't surprise them midway through the construction. Hey, oh, you forgot to put this here. Well, you approved the plan. Why do I have to do it later on now? Well, this is what it is. And then you're going to have to redo everything from scratch.
Without a doubt. So where did you guys get the inspiration to do a Spanish-themed restaurant over here, right? You're live with Grant Kruger and Freddy El Meselmani from Basqueria and Urban Pita, along with Jennifer English from the Food and Wine Radio Network and Ryan Stolcato. Ryan, like, where did you guys get this inspiration to go Spanish?
I was in Europe, and I love Spain. This is my go-to usually when I'm in Europe. Most of the summers I spend there because it's an easier lifestyle. You can, like I said, everything is open, everything is lively. You can go anywhere, anytime. So the idea was we need something popular that can bridge that gap between that cultural, going out, having a bite with people you don't know at a bar, hanging out, sharing things. Enjoying the evening. This is the idea that we wanted to create at Basqueria. So we figured a Spanish tapa kind of bridges the gap between Europe and the U.S. So, and it's familiar. So that's why we kind of wanted to go with the Spanish tapas. And I happen to know a French chef here in Tucson, Joel Schweier. His grandparents are actually Basque. He's from Bordeaux, France. So when we talked about this, he said, how about we just go ahead and do a Basque restaurant? That way I can put in my French influence as well. Because as you know, the Basque are half Spanish, half French. They're trying to have their own independence from Spain. So they have a different kind of idea. They have a different cultural food aspects, but they're shared. I mean, they're all blended in together that you can hardly separate Basque from Spanish tapas, but I mean, you can really tell if you're from that area, but it's pretty much similar, if I would say.
Understood. So what are your favorite dishes over there right now at Basqueria? Like, what am I trying if I go over there? My wife was just there with a girls' day a couple Saturdays ago, and she said it was fantastic. What are your go-tos?
I love our patatas bravas. They are pretty good. They're pretty crunchy, and they're a hit right now. Our paellas are pretty good. We try to keep it as authentic, as simple as possible with those. We have most of the Iberico chorizo, Iberico ham. We do all of that. We bring all the stuff from Spain. We're just a little bit worried on with how we're going to get those imports later on between Urban Pita and Basqueria. I have mostly imports.
Yeah, it's certainly something that you know, rings heavy on a lot of restaurateurs when we think about these tariffs and the way we might be able or not be able to get imported products into Southern Arizona and what those might cost us, too. A business of a million tiny little pennies over there, you know, you just can't take a 25% food cost hit and suddenly be profitable in the restaurant space in any capacity over here. So when we come back after the break, I want to talk more with Freddie and Riley about the challenges of operating in downtown Tucson over here, right? It's been both a meteoric rise and a bit of a decline, too, over the last couple of years. We've seen some pretty big closures pop up downtown. I'd love to talk with you guys about that downtown operating environment in the Old Pueblo. You're listening to Grant Krueger and Jennifer English on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., and we've got a couple more segments coming up with Freddie El Masamani and Riley Stolcato from Basqueria and Urban Pita. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Krueger. We are joined live in the KVUI studios by a pile of budding young restaurateurs and, of course, a very experienced food and wine expert in both Miss Jennifer English from the Food and Wine Radio Network.
Good morning.
Freddie El Masamani from Basqueria and Urban Pita and Riley Stolcato from Barrio Bagel and Slice that's yes, going to be sir. Opening up in Gilbert as well, too, you were telling me.
Yes, sir. Just opened up, actually, this month, so yeah, very exciting.
And that's with Don Guerra, right? Famous Tucson baker, another James Beard Award winner, and, of course, alumnus of this particular radio show as well, too. I love how all this ties together.
Right, you know, on, yeah.
We're talking about this 25th anniversary of the Food and Wine Radio Network, and it wasn't that long ago that when we all went to New York to celebrate and Janos was winning his honors after several years. They called him for many years a Susan Lucci, but he was so deserving for so long, doing such great work for an incredible length of time, and he still is. We were talking about this transition from fine dining to the fact that he's now got a sort of more relaxed, private kitchen and lab downtown where you will not only do like a cooking class and an eating experience, that he's made it possible for you to take all those elements that we loved about Janos and go have like a private session with him and have the taste of Janos that we've always loved. And it all ties back to not that long ago, there were just a few of us really beating the drum nationally for Tucson. And then over the last 5 years, look at how much they've been paying attention to Don Guerra and the incredible work that he's done and to the other nominees and winners that have done books and photography. And we're so rich with what's going on in the food world right now. It's better than ever.
We are truly blessed. And Freddie and I are even more blessed right now because Jennifer's made us these delicious mint juleps over here and these frosty cups with real mint. Like, we are definitely starting our morning off the right way on The Morning Voice. I hope you guys are having your mint juleps at home as well, too. While we're relaxing with a cocktail over here, Freddie, we were talking about downtown Tucson, and your establishment sit at the absolute nexus of Congress and 4th Avenue. I mean, you couldn't pick a more notable, more iconic corner than where both Basqueria and Urban Pita are located. But it's also had some challenges as well, too, right? This was sort of the site of a lot of infamous fights in front of the hi-fi location and collisions and things of that nature. Like, what's the operating environment like right now downtown?
Downtown has changed recently in the past 3 years. It seems like we got into this idea that downtown is scary and bad again, and people don't want to come back down there because it's full of homeless people and full of fights and all that you know, good stuff. The issue with that is the fights are going to happen regardless. It's just an aspect of drinking liquor. Some people just can't control their liquor. And they revert to violence for that to show their expression of, you know, when they get drunk. We can change that. And this notion of downtown is bad, and you know you can't be there past 10 p.m. is a wrong idea. Downtowns in every city around the world, they are full of life. They can, you know, they have everybody go down there to have fun, whether they want to go eat, whether they want to go see a museum, or they want to go see a comedy show. They want to go to the Rialto, go to the Fox. It's a melting pot, and with a melting pot, there's challenges. Not everybody thinks the same when there's different aspect of life, getting together in a small area. So the challenge with that is mostly that we have to figure out how we can secure the area in a manner that it makes it safe for everyone to enjoy whatever they're going downtown for. To get there, we have to work with downtown and TEP. And we've been trying our best to come to a common ground where it's suitable for all of us how to deal with these situations. And we're still trying. It's a trial and error kind of thing. And we're working on it. But at the moment, there has been changes. Downtown definitely is safe. People should come down here. The parking situation is really not that big of a deal. There's a lot of parkings around downtown that you can just access. There's one right at the entrance. There's one in the middle. There's one by the hotel. There's one by the court. There's plenty of street parking. It's really not that big of a nightmare being downtown. That said, the closure of the corner on Congress and 4th has impacted everybody, because those spaces used to hold about 200 to 250 a night. So if you remove 250 people from that corner, all of a sudden all those businesses around you are going to start seeing the difference, and they're going to feel the fact that there isn't 200, 300 people around you that might, you know, come in and support your establishment.
And Freddie, you're talking about both the hi-fi and the funky
and
monk
the
space.
The funky monk, correct.
Correct?
Correct. And then less people downtown means we're going to have less people to divide among us for downtown people. So if 300, 400 people are missing from downtown, it's going to impact a lot of the economy down there. So that's why we are trying our best to have downtown fully developed, not having empty spaces, because that's where most of the homeless kind of hang out. We're trying to make it so that it's always clean. There's always security walking around. The cops are always down there in the evenings. So we're trying to make that corner alive again. And I think in the near future, with projects coming in, I think that corner is going to live up back to what it used to be. And it'll be a better corner moving on.
And that's got to be a big win for Urban Pita, right? As that one opens back up, certainly having healthy nightlife from Oban and Basqueria and whatever goes into that corner space has got to make Urban Pita work better when there's late night business that can pile into a pita concept that's open pretty late. What are those operating hours going to be again?
We're going to go back to the weekends till 3 a.m. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We used to open till 3 a.m. After the rest of the days, we're open till midnight. We're probably going to shoot for that. Hopefully by the time we open that corner, would have a tenant would be, I'm just crossing my finger. Hopefully a tenant will move in. And I think it's a great idea to get that corner back up and alive. It will bring a lot of opportunities back to downtown and will increase the amount of people that are actually coming down to check out downtown.
Makes total sense.
And I want to talk about something that he said earlier when we were talking about internationally. People live differently around the world. And as we become more modern and as we go forward and what the opportunity is, remember we were talking about opportunities and opportunities in food service. I think a big opportunity, even in a town like this, is late night. We're living 24 hours a day with the global markets and the global trading and everything that's happening. Not only do we want something to eat after we go out, there's always a Coke and a slice or an Urban Pita. But what we really want to do is have life happening more around the clock. And having options like this, I'm really interested. We're so lucky to have people bringing that internationalism of late night, high quality, really good bites. And I remember when I first got here, you used to be able to go out and eat something late at night. Not so much anymore. And I think it's really one of the, again, you want to talk about how to be successful in food and beverage moving forward in the future? Look at what we don't have and what we need. And this is happening. And this is a conversation about what do we need? Who's going to do it? Who's going to bring this exciting food? And we have exciting food coming late at night for Tucsonans and people in Tucson visiting. It's really an exciting time.
No, without a doubt. Having late night food is something that I still feel is missing on the market to a certain degree. I'd love to see more operators bring that to Southern Arizona, where we could have options that aren't just fast food late at night in some capacity, right? I mean, we've all been infamously in the Nico's drive-through line at 2:30 in the morning in some capacity over here, right? But that's not really a James Beard award-winning culinary experience in any capacity.
I absolutely have been in the late night lane at Nico's because they're, you know, potato, egg, and cheese burrito, no matter what time of day it is, it's a really tasty bite, especially when you're hungry and there's nothing else.
So I want to talk to Freddie about the hours of Urban Pita and Oban and Basqueria in the daytime. Like, that east side of Congress seems a little quiet to me in the day, and I've noticed that a lot of the restaurants aren't open for lunch on some of the weekdays out there. Can we talk about that for a minute?
Of course. So after COVID and people not, you know, working from home, downtown had a huge challenge of having actual physical people down there. People just start working from home. TEP had that that option available. Caterpillar, same thing. So our lunch market during the day is usually based on those big corporations like TEP and Caterpillar. They haven't fully came back, and if they did come back, they have different habits, if that makes any sense. They, you know, for lunch now, they only eat this, or they're on a diet, or they're doing, or they discovered something else that they can order. So we kind of fell off the rotation. So instead of them coming to us 5-6 times in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, now we're seeing them once a week. So that kind of killed the lunch market for most of us down there. The idea that there's no parking is also put a toll on us, because there's plenty of parking. There's garages, like I mentioned earlier, and people kind of don't want to gamble on finding a parking spot or not, because that's going to eat out of their lunchtime. So they'd rather go to a place where they have there's a parking lot. They can just park, go pick up, and get out. So that's kind of why lunch kind of died out downtown. But now those companies are coming back, and they're forcing people to go back into their offices. So starting September, Basqueria is going to be open for lunch.
Oh, no way. That's awesome. I'm really excited to hear that.
We're going to go ahead and have some bocadillos, which are Spanish pretty much deli sandwiches. And we're going to do Spanish flatbreads as well, since we do have a pizza oven in the space.
I love it. Well, of course, that was a fired pie, if I remember correctly, before. Did you get that pizza oven?
Correct. And then it kind of stayed in the place, and it looks cool, so we kind of kept it, and we work with it. So we heat most of our food in there. We kind of cook most of our tapas, flash them in the oven. Gives it a little better taste than, you know, how Spain does it in microwave.
I love it. Well, let's take a quick break.
Including Spanish tortilla.
Including Spanish tortilla.
Let's take one more quick break over here. We're going to have one more segment with Jennifer English, Freddie Al-Meselmani, and Riley Stancato. You're listening to the 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. We've got a final segment over here with an amazing stack house in the KVOI studios. We've got Freddie Al-Meselmani from Urban Pita and Basqueria. Freddie, you've opened up two restaurants since Urban Pita closed, basically in the last year alone, which is a pretty big lift over here. Do you have a date yet of when the original Urban Pita is going to open up?
The remodel is fully done. If you take a look if you peek through the window, you can see it's pretty much came back to what it used to look like. We're currently waiting for a hood. So our hood is a specific kind of hood. It's a ventless hood that doesn't require to be connected to an exhaust. Those are specially made, and they have to make them to order, and you have to show them the equipment that you're putting in there so that they can match everything, because it comes in a full package. We ordered that about 3 months ago, and we haven't even gotten a date of shipment yet. So that's what we've been waiting for the past 4 months, I would say.
At this point, you're essentially going to miss our restaurant season either way, as I talk about on this show a lot. By about Memorial Day, Tucson's restaurant season is over, right? The U of A has gone. The fiery grip of summer has reached around us. We've got 100-degree days in the daytime over there. Like, it doesn't really pick back up until about early August for the U of A. Do you think you delay that opening then until about the beginning of Tucson's restaurant season?
At this point, I think that would be the best idea. There is no way around the summer in Tucson. So the best option would be is trying to open back up in August, bring everything back, try to fix anything that they missed, and then that way by September, when the students are back, we are fully operational.
I'm looking forward to that day. I think it's going to be great to help revitalize that corner on downtown, because with both Urban Pita Dark and that Hi-Fi Corner Dark over there, there's a whole lot of not going on in that neck of the woods right now, which can't help anybody.
Correct, correct. It does look sad on that north side of the street. The south side of the street, where Oban and Basqueria is, it looks more lively, and you can easily notice the difference between the north side of the street and the south side of the street.
Without a doubt, because your neighbor Oban over there does a great trade as well, too. You know, those guys have been there, it's been about a decade or so now for Oban, no?
Correct, correct.
And they seem to be hitting on all cylinders still to this day. I feel like that's been a real strong concept downtown, and I've been excited for their success.
They do a great job. They've been very successful.
And so, Riley, you guys have just opened up in the last month over here. Give a breakdown of the restaurant that you guys have in the Gilbert area with Don Guerra over here. Break down your partnership, your group. What do you guys got going on?
Yeah, Grant. So in Gilbert, we just opened up about 3 weeks ago. It's called Barrio Bagel and Slice. It's 689 South Country Club, kind of right in the heart of Gilbert right there. And what we wanted to do was kind of meet the consumers at the drive-through window, and we created a Arizona's first James Beard Award-winning drive-through concept with Don Guerra and the bagels, the Barrio bagels, and the Barrio Focaccia Sicilian-style pizza, and it's been a huge hit so far. We did a soft opening earlier in this month, and they just cut the ribbon a few days ago, actually, so very exciting, man.
I love it. Super excited. I can't believe that we've got two James Beard award-winning concepts we're talking about here in the same studio on the same day. That seems crazy. Jennifer, where can our listeners engage with you and find you?
You can find me on social media. It's an easy place to go. On X, you can find me at Flavor Bank, where it says Jennifer English, words are my art, because I am a culinary storyteller and communicator. And we were talking earlier about eating is the new cooking. These guys are bringing that concept to life. Eating is the new cooking means that all the content you see in the world of social media and everywhere we look is focused on eating, and everybody's about to have that I'll have what she's having moment. Everywhere you look on social media, if you're a restaurateur, if you're an operator, if you're looking for opportunity, show me the most delicious and irresistible stuff. Irresistible is the duty that all of us have that work in food. If what you're making doesn't rise to the level of irresistible, then you got to go back and keep working on it just a little bit more. Don Guerra does that as well, if not better than everybody in the country. You can find Irresistible all over Tucson. Irresistible has been the way we defined Tucson flavor for a very long time, making a city of gastronomy. And if you want to know why we get it so right, it's because we understand irresistible, and we understand I see you, I hear you, you matter, and the act of hospitality and hosting. If you want to find me on Instagram, you can. It's Jenny Foods, J-E-N-E Foods. And I can also be found at Proof Magazine, where I'm the editor at large. And if you've got anything to do with the spirits industry or the food and beverage industry, send me your stories, because I will turn them into news features on bcfoodnews.com, and news at bcfoodnews.com is an easy place to find me as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us over here, Jennifer. And thank you so much for these cocktails as well, too.
Well, and the Spanish tortilla, because we're tying it all together. And I wanted to talk about some trends, and we've run out of time. But one of the big trends is Spanish food right now is a big trend. I brought you some Asian snacks, another big trend. Again, we talked about adaptogens and functional beverages, functional foods, you know, the cannabis, the hemp. All of these things are part of the trend of the future. And anytime you want to talk about forecasting and trends, I'm your girl.
I love it. We'd love to have you back over here on The Morning Voice. Anytime, the invitation is always there for you, Miss English. So we really appreciate it. And Freddie, break it down for us. You've got three restaurants, like two of which you've opened in the last year. Give us your locations and where guests can interact with you, sir.
We have Urban Pita that's currently open right now on the east side. It's on Golf Links in Wilmot. It's literally right across from the David Monthan Air Force Base. You can access us. We have a big parking lot. You can come in, pick up your food. We're available on all delivery services as well. So if you live far away from that area, just go ahead and try to order us online, because Uber Eats and DoorDash has been working with us to expand their map with us so we can reach Tucson. The downtown location is located on 4th and Congress. It's currently getting remodeled, as we mentioned earlier. We should be open back again in September. Hopefully, we'll see everybody back there. For Basqueria is located across the street from Urban Pita. It's on also Congress and 4th, right next to Oban. We are open till midnight, Friday, Saturday. We serve food till midnight. We're going to start a late night lounge kind of DJ starting this weekend. There's going to be a little lounge party, nothing crazy. We're just going to keep it low tempo, kind of chill environment. We don't want to go into the crazy club environment at all. We just want you to enjoy food and listen to great music. And then for the rest of the days, we're open till 10 p.m. So if you also need a late night, you know, not that late of a craving, we're open till 10, so we're happy to have you.
Love to have you guys come visit Basqueria at Urban Pita. Jennifer, Freddie, Riley, thank you so much for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. See you next week.